You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about the immigrant's dilemma, surviving and thriving in a new economic society. So let's go on to our second slide here, which talks about for thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years, there's been migration, human migration around the planet, mostly for survival reasons, or almost all for survival reasons. Environmental pressures, scarcity of resources, weather changes. Yeah, climate change had been one of the reasons. Just as weather changes, one area of the world becomes inhabitable, right?
And the other, the before is difficult, now become better.
We are talking about immigration or immigrants coming to a country, whether it's the United States or another, for economic, most likely political reasons, right?
Who is these people?
Who are these people? Wait, wait, sorry. You have something to tell me?
No, it's a secret. Nobody knows.
No one knows. Nobody knows. Let's continue on with the historic evolutionary reasons for immigration. So we talked about environmental pressures, fleeing danger, whether it's war, conflict, unsafe environments, such as predatory threats or disease. And then also opportunities for a better life. Migration offers chances for improved resources, social standing, and safety. So what's the main benefit of, let's go right into the workplace, because this is a workplace-focused show today a little bit. We'll talk about social as well as workplace. But the main benefits of cultural diversity in the workplace. So we have people coming from other countries. Here's a couple of them. Increased creativity and innovation. When you have more backgrounds to choose from, more environments and education and diversity of upbringings, you can come up with new ideas. You have additional creativity by bringing more people in with more differing opinions and backgrounds. You have improved employee engagement and retention when you welcome diversity into the workplace, meaning when people feel welcomed, they want to stay. Better decision making. When you have more thoughts and more perspectives, you end up with maybe a decision that you wouldn't have made otherwise, which in studies show that, generally speaking, you get better decisions. And then enhanced market competitiveness. When you understand and have people in your company, in your organization that are like your customers, a diverse culture, a diverse company, when you have people in your company that are diverse like your culture, like your country now is becoming, or your city or state or where you're living.
So you have a good example in your company. You have somebody in the other country that make a supplier with different language, have business with your coffee. So easy to do any transaction because they speak the same language, the same culture, maybe better deal between two parties because it's the same.
Right. So that is where, and not only is it because they just speak the same language, but you may be able to understand the nuances of the legal and contracts and marketing materials and the small print. And having someone who speaks Spanish when you're going to talk to somebody from Spain
can be helpful.
Yeah. What are they saying? What are they saying to
Nothing.
Each other?
They say love
oh,
you.
Oh, yeah. They want to have coffee afterwards. Coffee? I'm sorry. Latte. Or is it espresso?
Café con leche.
That's it. Café con leche. So the diversity of the culture can help benefit the company, as well as it can benefit the country, right?
Exactly.
As we get to know each other. But the point is that when you have diverse culture, but no integration, that can be a problem.
Yeah.
So we need assimilation and we need connection. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about today, assimilation and connection. So the interesting next slide was, those were all the benefits, but with benefits, in order to get to the benefits, sometimes you have to go through some hardships. And sometimes here are the things that immigrants go through in a new country. Mm-hmm. They many times have a language barrier, which with limited language proficiency, it can create communication challenges, not only for that person, but for somebody within the neighborhood or within the company to also work with that person to make sure that they're understanding each other correctly. The contracts we just talked about, there could be a difficulty in understanding contracts, legal documents. Access to language education could be costly for that new person. Also, it could be time consuming. And also, later in life, it can be a little bit difficult. It can take time. Language barriers can lead to social and workplace isolation. We're going to talk about what happens when somebody maybe has a language barrier and what they do in order to feel comfortable. We're not going to say yet. We're going to say in a minute. Let's talk about customs and cultural differences. Immigrants face unfamiliar customs and social norms, sometimes depending on where they come from and what society they've moved to. Workplace expectations and social behaviors differ. That's right, and we can talk about like French versus US, and there's a good book out there, it's called, and I'm gonna try to remember it, but it talks about different cultures and their norms of business. Mm-hmm. For instance, the French may be very direct in criticizing somebody, but it's a good thing because they're upfront about it and then they want to go to dinner afterwards. Where the U.S., they may not say anything and they may fire you behind your back, right? So you know, you may be overtly polite and covertly impolite, or the other way around, covertly impolite, but...
In general speaking, because you can find people the different culture but a different behavior too. So sometimes the cultures don't mark exactly the behavior.
So this is like the bell curve of culture. There's a average, there are people to this side of the average and then extreme, and then to this side of the average and extreme. And all these little bell curves of behaviors overlap, but they're what they call generalities. Which, you know, this culture is a little bit more this way, this culture is a little bit more this way. But when we come together, when we understand that, and we understand that there's reasons behind it, one of them is cultural upbringing, one is language, one is maybe the history of that country, and maybe there's like some religious pieces tied to that as well.
Yeah, and also one interesting example that right now is in my mind is the realtor that we met in Spain. So he immigrated to Germany. He immigrated. Yes. The wife is from Denmark. So he has so bright culture in himself. They connect with you pretty good. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Because he's crazy.
Like you.
Like me.
Both is that you find the other soulmate.
Yeah, that's it. He's a good guy. But the case is that we can be from diverse cultures and really get along together once we understand each other and know each other. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like forgetting that you're from different cultures and just having a good time and getting to know each other, So there we go. What else do we have in here? Lack of cultural understanding can lead to miscommunication, so try to understand the other culture. Next slide, we want to talk about knowledge of systems. Immigrants lack familiarity with legal, healthcare, and educational systems. This can be a real challenge. Navigating bureaucracy is overwhelming. Lack of knowledge about rights leaves them vulnerable. If they don't know what they can and can't do or what someone can and can't do to them, that can be a problem. Legal system unfamiliarity, or being unfamiliar with the legal system, can lead to exploitation, which, you know, hey, like taxes, remember? We have some friends and they came to the United States. They don't speak English very well, but they're in a community where there is a Spanish tax person, a tax professional. And they're told, oh, you got to do your taxes. You do your taxes, you're going to owe $600. It's going to cost you $300 to do the taxes. And here's a person from their own country. And because they don't understand the tax system in the United States, they'll rely upon somebody with a familiar language, familiar culture, and they'll say, okay, here, do help me with this, rather than be able to take the time. They don't have the time to learn the tax situation in the United States. And what it turned out is that for that person, they were doing a lot of work as a contractor. So they were basically doing their own business, going around from building to building, working on electrical systems, and they were getting paid as a 1099, quote, not employee, but a 1099 contractor. So they were being told by the company they were working for, or the companies, that they were basically running their own business. So when they started to look at it from the standpoint of running their own business, they actually got money back from the IRS, but they needed to know the system in order to do that. When you are maybe unfamiliar with the new culture, the new language, the new society, you may say, well, where can I live where I feel comfortable? So sometimes people will self-isolate in familiar communities. They'll have emotional and cultural support. But this long-term self-isolation can limit language development and integration in the community. Over-reliance on these communities may hinder the professional growth as well by having the time when they're not at the company be steeped in their own language and their own culture. Mm-hmm. So they aren't pushing their limits and their boundaries outside of work. Yeah. At work, they're struggling to try to deal with the new language, but at home and in their community, they're back in their old culture. So it takes longer to raise your professional
knowledge. I understand the people missing because I have my own experience missing your culture, your food, your joke, your people that you can talk with your same language, with the same kind of the joke when you grew up in your town. So you missing that when you found this community, you feel, that is a nice place to stay. But on the other hand, I hear somebody say that he moved to United States and stay almost 5 years in this kind of community for all people in the same country. And he recommend maybe you stay 1 or 2 years or move to the other community with people more professional that you can have other opportunity, because typically you can find job by reference with somebody.
Network.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you are in this network that people don't have job, it's difficult to have a better job. So he moved and he started to have a new group, diversity and other stay, and the opportunity is open in the level that he's looking for. So
connections that do not exist within that smaller isolated community.
Yeah.
That is one of the other things, which is the challenge. Lack of mentorship, which is part of this, right? Because you have lack of professional and social connections when you have no established network of trusted professionals. You have lack of personal connections, which hinders job access, is exactly what Lizette was saying. That networking is critical for career advancement. Family and social support systems, that's another. So say you move to the new country with your spouse or a partner and you have a child. And now you're looking for a job, but what do I do with little Jimmy?
Yeah.
What do I do with Jimmy when I need to go on an interview? I don't have my parents, I don't have cousins, and now it makes it difficult. Without extended family, immigrants can face higher burdens. So we, maybe being the non-immigrant now, right, have to realize that there are all these layers of challenges, that it's not just, somebody's here and they have all the opportunity. It's they're here and now they've got all these challenges that maybe we don't have as somebody who is living in the society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody who is part of maybe a company already and in a community that may be a bit mixed, that you have these opportunities that somebody new doesn't have yet because they don't know people. And I think we have one or two more things here. This is something that we talked about, which is, how does society view immigrants? Mm-hmm. The challenge is sometimes that we only see the outspoken, that maybe 70-80% are very welcoming. But if 5-10% are like, no, I don't want immigrants, then that's what we feel and what we see. So we always, like in the media and the news, we always see the people who are loudest.
Yeah.
Why? Because, well, news wants ratings. They want to cover a story. The politicians want to make a point. That all these things are out there. So it's always the worst voices that get covered.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I hear.
You hear. So how society views immigrants are often viewed politically, affecting public perception. It doesn't actually have to be a correct perception. It is just a perception that's pushed. Let's go on to the next slide. And it has to do with economic and workplace challenges, that a lot of times immigrants are underemployed and their skills are often unrecognized because it's hard for them to communicate just what they are good at. And nobody really knows them to vouch for them as well. Wage disparities may happen and occur, and they may have limited access to promotions, because how do I make somebody a lead or a manager of their department if I'm having a tough time communicating, even if they are really skilled?
Yeah.
So these are some of the challenges. They may be put into more hazardous working conditions or more readily accept positions mm-hmm. in hazardous occupations,
yeah,
because they need to work. And I think you've seen this as you've traveled around the country.
Yeah.
Legal and immigration status is another challenge. Undocumented immigrants live in fear of deportation. Therefore, they're not going to say anything, bring anything up, or talk against their employer, even if the working conditions aren't good. Visa and work restrictions limit job stability. Affordable legal help is often scarce, and immigrants are vulnerable to workplace exploitation, as we just said. Finally, overcoming the challenges. Community organizations offer language, legal, and social support. These could be reached out to. In fact, if you are somebody who wants to volunteer at one of these organizations to help immigrants as well, this is something that can be done to be more close with new people in your neighborhood. Mentorship programs help professional growth. Anti-discrimination laws are essential for equal workplace treatment. And finally, education and skill-building programs improve opportunities. Boy, that was a big opening segment for 90 Day Soulmate.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan, and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
We do a presentation called Instant Rapport, and it has to do with getting along with others. And we thought that this was an appropriate spot for us to understand more about immigrants, people mm-hmm. from diverse cultures, and how we can build rapport either with somebody who is an immigrant, or as an immigrant, we can build rapport with others from a diverse community or workplace.
Yeah.
So let's start off with instant rapport for powerful relationships. This map of the United States shows spikes, and this is actually a population map. But why I want to show this is where communities are organized, right? They're organized around these cities. So New York City has a big spike up there on the right side of the map, and it shows that it's a highly densely populated area. And each of these areas have varying spikes. This is a representative map of our brains. The cities being thoughts, knowledge, skills, things that we've developed. And each of our brains is very unique based upon our education, our upbringing, our families, our language. There's so many things that make our brain map have a New York City at this size, a Chicago at that size, that we have these neurons and synapses that are connecting and really focused on certain things that we have that Lizette doesn't have. And Lizette has stuff that I don't have. And the person down the road also, that we have these things. And so when we go to speak with somebody and we start talking with them about anything, even if we speak the exact same language, our language references things that are already in our brain that we think about in a certain way, that even with the same language, we're not really talking exactly the same.
Yeah.
So the map is to show that if I want to develop another portion of my brain, like, all right, Nevada, Las Vegas was not as developed as I want it to be, I can really focus in. And I'm just going to give an example. Let's pretend this brain map is actually our knowledge of the United States. I could go and start researching everything about Las Vegas, about the shows that are out there, when it was founded, how do they have water in Las Vegas, how do they power it, why are there so many casinos in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. why is it so hot in Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Why do you just forget everything that happens in Las Vegas?
Right?
The point is that you can develop this area. And then once you start learning all that stuff about Las Vegas, that little bump, that thing that looked like population on the map there, would grow because now you know more about it. When you deal with somebody new, the more connections that you have of similar past knowledge, the easier and better it is to be able to communicate, the clearer your communication is, because you can have similar references. What does hot mean to you compared to someone who grew up in Toronto? Mm-hmm. And if you grew up in Las Vegas, they grew up in Toronto, and you say, yeah, it was hot today. They may think, oh, you know, 120 degrees? And the person in Toronto is like, 55? It's not snowing today?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that might be Quebec, not Toronto. But the point being is that our reference to things, even the simplest words, hot, cold, snow, I don't know, traffic, right? Oh, there was so much traffic today. And I'm in central Pennsylvania telling somebody that, and they grew up in Los Angeles. Oh, so much traffic today. I had to wait for two lights to get to work today. And they had they had 12 lanes of stop traffic in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But the point is that all these tiny differences in our past create differences in how we think about the words we use. That's even if we're using the same language. When our languages are different, that is even more difficult. But let's even go beyond just those brain bumps. Let's go, what causes that? What causes those patterns? Mm-hmm. And here it is. When you connect with somebody, you're talking, you hear the words, all those words you hear, and when you see their face and you see how they move, that's all above the water. Let's call these things icebergs. So these are representatives of icebergs. That what's below the water, what we don't know what their family of origin is, what their culture is, what their belief is, their social upbringing, how they're socially connected with others, where they are in the social strata and structure. What's their education and knowledge? When we don't know those things, and we're only communicating above water on the words they use, and again, if we're using the same language, we're only focusing here of words, but how those words impact or are impacted by all those patterns, the patterns that come from their family, their upbringing, their culture, is that if we don't know the emotional implication, the logical implication of the words we use, because we don't know any of that stuff, we have a hard time connecting. And then if those words that are being used up here are difficult for us to understand because it's a different language, that makes it even more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about how we met.
We didn't talk.
We didn't talk at all.
Yeah, we spoke the body language.
I literally know What? Nada. Nada Spanish. No Spanish. And Lizette knew some English. Our conversations would always have to go around is, am I really understanding what you're saying? And are you understanding what I'm saying? And we spent time trying to figure out the understanding behind. And as we learned more about each of our individual family of origin, you know, Lizette's family, my family, where we grew up, what school we went to, what we learned, what information we knew, what sports we did, what exercise we did, as we learned more and more and more about that, then the words we used, even though they weren't a gigantic group, there weren't thousands and thousands of words, we could relate them to what we already knew about the person, and we could communicate much better. Why, I just, the big explanation there is that as an immigrant, as somebody who may be talking with an immigrant at work, if you can start to understand what's below the water of that iceberg, where are they from? What was their family like? If you can understand some of those things, what is their educational background? Oh, wow, they're an engineer. I didn't know that. Oh, they did. They have their doctorate in philosophy. They've got 20 years experience working with fiber optics. Whatever it is once you understand more about what's below the water, then even when you have limited word usage in communication, you can communicate better. And not only that, it gives you a better view of who that person is. Because if you only view them at the words they use, and I remember this as a kid, you're like, oh, they must be stupid. You know, or if I can't speak Spanish and I go into a different country and I try to order something, you know, it's like, hey, get out of my store. Do you know what I mean? Or
yeah,
not?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's people judge you on the words you use. Don't be one of them. Be somebody who judges somebody on the content of their character, not the words they use.
Yeah, I have many examples in my own life. If people listen and with a strong accent, and then 3 days later say, oh, you have something in your brain.
Yeah. So yeah. It's and that I know I've watched you progress over the years with your use of English,
mm-hmm.
but also I've known the content of what you knew and the background and the education you had and the work environment you came from. So when I saw that depth, but then I saw how sometimes you were getting reaction or how you would report back to me how things went at the company you visited,
mm-hmm.
I could see that there's that initial connection where they're like, Lizette can't understand me, so she doesn't know what she's talking about. Then maybe a day or two later when she's consistent and she brings up information based upon her knowledge of ISO, right? ISO 9001. And suddenly it is congruent and understandable with what I know about ISO 9001. I'm going, wow, she actually knows that. And then when she pulls out a fact or a figure that I didn't know and she knows, I'm going, wow, she knows more than me. But if I had only judged it on the communication piece, mm-hmm. and not the knowledge, that's where we can lose a really valuable connection.
And also, I maybe it's a good recommendation for people like me. So you need to be persistent, keep going, reduce the emotion, because we feel like, oh my God, the people see me this way. It's okay. It's the person's view. It's not my view.
Be consistent.
So I be consistent, and then one moment people figure out, no. I cannot have the power for change the mind the other, but I can be consistent to my information.
Yes.
To share with others.
Yeah. So good and bad news.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is an old presentation, not presentation, this is an old numbers from years ago. This has been out for many, many years, that when you connect, when you talk, when you communicate, the communication, the message you give to somebody, only 7% comes from your words. The tone of voice tailors that and colors it by 38%, and the body language by 55%. That was a study done by Dr. Albert Mehrabian, who was a behavioral psychologist, done in 1971. Statistics have been around for many, many, many years, and it's still reliable today. It's still something that is referenced all the time, that the words we use are only about 7% of the communication. It's when our tone of voice, and our body language is consistent and congruent with that, that more of the message is absorbed. So now, good and bad news. If you know that, and you know that you really have knowledge and education and experience, but you are feeling bad about how you communicate, so your tone of voice is dropped and slow, and you cover your mouth when you talk, and you don't look somebody in the eye because you're not feeling good, now you've lost your tone of voice and your body language, and you have maybe limited words that you can use. Now your communication's dropped. But when you have the confidence that you know what you're talking about and that you have to figure out how to get the correct words, but you keep your tone and your body language congruent with the message, people will feel that, ah, there's something there. I like this person. I'm using the word like. I want to listen to them. It's really tough to listen to somebody who's not looking at you and feels nervous. You know, when somebody is not coming across positively and energetic, it's sometimes hard to listen.
Yeah, the
energy
is important too. Yeah.
Say that one more time.
Energetic.
So the congruency of all that, the energetic is like, I want to listen. I want to hear. I want to hear what's underneath. Yeah. But you need to connect in that way. And again, this is something that we want to share, is that when you feel confident about your capability, maybe the communication isn't there yet, but you're working on it. Keep working on it. Make the connection in the words, but keep the connection in the tone of voice and the body language. People want to be around people who have good body language. They are positive. They are confident. And you don't have to be overly confident, like I know what I'm talking about. But the point is that you have the option of trying to be positive or being nervous and ruining the communication before it even begins to start. Is that fair?
Yeah.
What's next on our list here? So going back, words show the language and the knowledge, and that's where that comes from. Tone of voice is our personality and our programming, which we can work on. Body language is our emotional state. It can be part of our culture, all that. So when those things are congruent, and we can try to match that with the person we're talking to, right? So the words we use have to be the words we use. We're trying to convey something. The words we choose, we want to match with the person we're talking with. The tone of voice we use, we want to match their personality, or at least not be offensive to their personality, not be overbearing, not be in contrast or conflict with it. And then in our body language, if they don't like being a close talker, we don't want to become a close talker. And this is like a cultural thing too, right? You know what I'm talking about?
No.
That we want to match people in our body language. We want to match them in our tone based upon what they find acceptable.
But you need to have, we're talking about our observation, because people observe yourself, how you talk, how you acting, how you move your body. So sometimes many people is unconscious how do that, and it's more difficult. So
that is true. When you're trying to communicate and you're trying to observe yourself, slow down. Sometimes.
When I listen to the show after that, I say, what do you talk like that?
So finally, when you connect, here are some things you can do to be more understandable and to understand better. First, seek to understand. Less words, more understanding. I think last time we did this show, we talked about Elvis Presley, who said a little bit less conversation, a little bit more action. But the point would be is a little bit more understanding, a little bit less conversation. Make sure they understand. How do you do that? Ask questions. Make sure that what you think you're saying is what they are hearing. Restate and paraphrase. Use many different ways to say the same thing. Come up with a couple of different examples to provide. Don't just say the same thing over and over, but come at it from a different perspective. a different set of words, a different number of words.
And also be transparent and honest, because when you really talk with your transparency, you connect better. But if you try to figure out acting in different way, also the connection is broke.
Truth in communication.
Yeah.
There's only one way to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. There are many, many ways of not telling the truth.
Yeah. Right. How would you know that?
So understanding the person first, understanding their experience. Is it very, very, very a lot of experience, a great deal of experience? Or are they new to the industry? What's their culture, education, and social norms? You want to not offend, and you want to speak the language that they know. Meaning, if you are talking to somebody who's new to your industry, don't throw a bunch of jargon around, jargon from your industry. Explain things so they understand, and you can always ask, hey, how much do you know about this, so I don't over-explain or under-explain? And if ever I say something and you say, hey, I need to know more, just say it. I'm happy to help you out. Or if I'm explaining too much and you know it already, tell me that too, right? So this is moving on to communication here. Language we use. And I think we're going to come back for this, because this is really important. So we've gone into how we communicate, but we want to talk about language specifically, because language changes how we think about things. And we had a show called The Language Quotient. And when we come back, we're going to have some highlights from that, and then our final thoughts on the immigration
dilemma.
Actually, it's the immigrant's dilemma. Immigration dilemma. The immigrant's dilemma. What are words anyway? They're only 7% of communication. We'll be back right after this.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. So language itself, language quotient, it talks about the language that Lizette is a different personality in different languages. We can also talk about Spanish and English, which we'll do in a minute here in action. But let's go back to different personality in different language. Do you know anybody who in a different language has a different personality?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So somebody who's really confident in their own language and also has all the culturally appropriate ways that their language fits with their culture, meaning they grew up in a culture, they have language that surrounds that, all their thoughts have been put in their brain and their patterns in that language, in that culture, that everything, it can trigger a whole bunch of stuff in their brain that has a certain personality to it based upon the words they know, who they grew up with, and the things associated with, let's say, for instance, Spanish. Now in English, maybe for Lizette, all of her English was business-related English.
And relationship with the husband.
So she's really messed up. Now she's really messed up. But the point would be is that if her struggles with English were always business related, and her knowledge of Spanish, which was innate and just part of her upbringing, was very fluid and culturally normal, that there can be a way she acts when she's talking Spanish, because she has access to all those parts of her brain, where in English, she's been focused on numbers and ISO 9001 and 14000 terminology. And so there can be different personalities when you speak in different languages.
Yeah, you can see my presentation in English versus Spanish. So.
And the level of confidence, relaxation,
yeah.
Humor,
yeah.
All those things can change.
People laughing more in
Spanish?
Spanish. Or maybe the English is laughing more.
They could do that. They might. So, for instance, Spanish and English, let's talk about that for a minute, and also color, weather, time, direction, love. Let's go right into language. Time, direction, space, urgency. Different languages have different senses of urgency and time and space. Numbers, do they exist? And I believe in some languages they don't exist. There were no such things as numbers. What's the base? Is it a base 10, base 16? How complex are the numbers? Colors. Talk about the Greeks and perceptions and emotion, that there were only a certain number of colors, and then they would describe them differently. And if you only had access to certain colors, or in your, like, for instance, say in Spanish you had 7 different colors of red. Mm-hmm. They could mean different things to you. This red could mean this fruit's fresh, this one's overripe, this one is red of blood, this is, and you have all these reds that mean something different to you, and here as Jim, I say, oh, it's red.
Is wine or is...
Red wine.
Blue.
Red wine and blue.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Masculine, feminine. We were talking about this just before the show. In Spanish, everything is either masculine or feminine. And I'm like, we have the door and the house and the car, and they're neither masculine or feminine.
Yes, but we have la casa.
And then all these,
el carro.
All these things change because of it. But if you're thinking of this thing as a female or feminine thing, even though it's still the book, it's associated with all other things feminine, mm-hmm. where for me it's not. So that's just a nuance of culture.
Yeah, yeah.
And different societies have different ways of dealing with that. Sharp or round. And we did a presentation in, I think it was in Finland, on this, talking to a group, and I just put pictures on the wall of watches and of buildings and different things. And I was asking for preferences, who liked the pictures on the left more than the ones on the right. And 90% of the people picked the ones on the left. And they were rounded watches and rounded buildings, and they were smooth curves. And 10% picked these jagged things that were like spikes, square watches. And I made this statement that, yes, the round ones are more maternal. They're more motherly. They're more of, they're more soft. They're more caring. People usually find them warmer. After the presentation, this gentleman comes up to me and goes, well, I'm not sure about that. I liked all the other ones, the spikes and this and that, and the squares. So I just asked, hey, where are you from? And he told me where he was from. And then I started looking at the architecture from where this gentleman grew up. And there were a lot more spikes and sharp edges. And there was more sharpness to the culture in all aspects, which you know, so now you've got somebody who I'm assuming thinks the way I do about shapes. And if I was having a conversation and I was saying, oh, I like this because it's like this, they may be thinking the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume everyone's like me.
No. Thank God.
We'll cut that. Nah, we're not going to cut that. And then finally, I want to go to the bottom one here, which has to do with responsibility. Direct, indirect, shared, or negligence as far as responsibility. We talked about, hey, the book just fell off the table. Hey, did you knock the book off the table? Who did that? Who broke the cup? And you said what? The cup broke.
The cup broke.
The cup broke.
Yeah, we don't say who do that. It's broken.
The cup broke. That the assumption of responsibility or the designation of responsibility less important for Lizette and her upbringing than for me and my upbringing. For me, it was who did it. It was always who's responsible. Who do we have to punish? Where Lizette is more...
No,
it's a society thing. It's a society's responsible. The book, it fell by itself. No one's responsible. Don't worry. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So in any case, that is how some things are different. Speaking is natural for us, so we learn to speak very naturally. What's not natural for us is reading and writing. reading and writing change our brain in a way that can never go back. It's a forced thing that we learn at some point in our life, hopefully, when we're young, because that's when it's easiest. And as such, they're not naturally wired to read and write, and within the ages of 5 or 6 is when, on a daily hard work to master this skill, that they learn it over several years. Once they learn how to read and write, they've learned how to read and write in a certain language with the rules of that language. You know, the red book, where you would have the book read. So the order of words, the rules around words, how they're used, how our expressions are, that those things are now formed, the reading and writing part of it, not only just the saying of it, but the reading and writing and the rules that you need for the reading and writing become programmed in you. They have programmed your mind based upon that. And once you have that, you think in a certain way that other people do not think. Other cultures do not think. Not that they don't have like the same thoughts, just how you process. It's you're processing it like a Mac while someone else is processing it like a IBM or some other Commodore 64. Mm-hmm. That there's certain software that's making you think about things in certain ways. Finally, our reading ability will change the formation in our brain, the way our brain is formulated. Again, the synapses, the neurons, the way information flows changed forever. It actually impacts our visual part of our brain, where how we connect our visual part of our brain to our brain is impacted by our reading and writing, which actually makes us see the world differently. We have unique perspective and observation, and you know, it can also, our ability to read when motivated, and I'm trying to remember exactly what that was about, but it, you know, that our motivation to learn to read really impacts the ability to read. That if we have no reason to do it, it's a tough thing to do, to learn how to read. So later in life, and we go back to now where we are starting this program from, that as an immigrant to a country, that learning to read and write in the new language, not only speak in the new language, but read and write, can give you an insight into how that culture thinks because of how the structures of their sentences are. The second benefit is that knowing how to speak, read, and write in multiple languages give you a much more diverse way of thinking and added benefits. And you know what it can stave off? Yeah. Dementia and brain challenges as we get older.
Step to learn Spanish.
Well, I will. It can improve our health, physical, mental, and spiritual. It can build our brain. We can self-actualize. So, conclusion to all this is, with immigration, the immigrant's dilemma, all of us need to value the differences that the diversity brings to our country and our companies. That if we are an immigrant, we need to value the country, not only the new one that we're in, but the country we came from. There are certain things that are part of us that we need to value and recognize that we bring value because of it, even though we left that country. The country that welcomed us in, we need to value their benefits, and the people there too, wonderful people. Recognize the immigration experience enhances resilience and broadens your view. In case things don't go well and you have to go back to the country you came from or move to another country, you haven't wasted time, you've learned. When you learn, your brain grows, your resilience grows, you become stronger and more able to handle more challenges. Mm-hmm. Finally, cultural diversity drives innovation, creativity, and stronger decision-making. Language and knowledge skills are key to personal and professional growth. We can't stress that enough. Not only that, it will improve your ability to think about many things, and better health and brain health, especially for the long term. Finally, mentorship and community outreach leads to increased interconnectivity. Either take part in it or volunteer your time to be helpful in those areas. Those are ways that we think that we and you and all of us together can provide more value to each other in a loving and helpful way. Thanks for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Have a great
You're listening to 90 Day